is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I am your host, Sean Kane, and we are getting into the week two of the NFL. Week two, baby. Here we go. I mean, listen, I don't know what to do about my David Johnson shares. You're not alone. I don't know what to do. I am staring at the waiver wire with a lot of anxiety, trying to replace Andrew Luck, trying to replace David Johnson. There's a lot of things going wrong, and it is a fun time to be an NFL fan. You know, I mean, last night's Monday night games, we learned a lot. We learned that the Minnesota offense will probably meet the expectations of preseason hype, that Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs are certainly capable of absorbing mass numbers of targets in that offense and production. Dalvin Cook, for real. Saints defense, it's the same as 2016. Let's run it back, baby. And the Saints running back committee is going to be a bit of a headache. I also, hey, Chargers Broncos. The Chargers can't catch a break. I don't know if that franchise is cursed, but they just can't catch a break. You remember how many tough games they lost last year? Once again, there was a tough game in Denver on that one. Played well. I was impressed with Trevor Siemian's final line, and you know he was super efficient, and he continues to be kind of the best man for the job there in Denver as far as just managing games and creating enough plays to put them in a decent situation. I don't know. He's not the future, but he's not a terrible quarterback. So some interesting things from last night. You know, week two is going to be very, very interesting. So I'm going to jump into the game-by-game breakdown. But before I do that, I want to make sure you guys are aware. Patreon.com/lineuplogic, the cheat sheet, the lineup show. It's all going to be ready to go Friday here, breaking down the main slate. Listen, our listeners had good weekend. We had a good weekend, and it was nice to see. So hopefully we're going to get back into that. But we have I'm going to talk all the way through all these games Thursday to Monday, Monday night, and it should be, you know, it should be a pretty nice main slate. There's a lot of really, really nice options out there. So we're certainly got a lot to talk about in this game by game breakdown. All right, let's jump straight into it. We have the Texans going to Cincinnati on the Thursday night game. This one sitting right now, Bengals favored by 5, 21 points to the Texans 16. Bengals getting plenty of public bets, even though they absolutely were brutal in that game against Baltimore. I think that's probably more of a product of the Baltimore defense, but I mentioned this, the Cincinnati offensive line, very bad. You know, two offenses, I think, in general in this game that really did not impress. On paper, for me, the Cincinnati unit should be a lot better. They just have more talent. Platoons at running back, though. You know, you do have two elite wide receivers on either side of the ball. So here's what I love. It's basically DeAndre Hopkins and AJ Green. You know, they're going to be target hogs. Two teams that need wins. I think you're going to see negative game script for Houston in this situation. AJ Green should also be able to you know, do work against this Houston secondary that, you know, we didn't really see how much they got exposed in that Jacksonville game because Jacksonville just ran the ball so much. But I think AJ Green, even against a very good secondary at Baltimore, still was able to soak up some targets and create a decent line for himself. You know, I try to get a read on whether or not Jonathan Joseph is going to shadow Green. I don't think it's going to be the case. You know, Houston, pretty effective in 2016 against the wide receiver one. You know, no AJ Bowie there anymore, though. So in general, that unit, I think, is a little bit, watered down. JJ Watt, who knows what he'll be with the finger injury. So the pressure isn't going to be there necessarily that we worried about with the Baltimore unit. So you have to think AJ Green is in a good spot. On the opposite side, it's Hopkins. I mean, he saw 11 targets from Deshaun Watson. He's got a tougher spot here against Drake Kirkpatrick, but, you know, he had a really bad spot against Jacksonville, and he still was force-fed targets and was able to create a decent amount of volume. Watson is going to lean on him, and he is going to feed him the ball. So if I'm doing anything in this Thursday night game, I'm probably just playing some elite wide receivers, and trusting the talent in that situation. Bears-Bucks. Beginning of the main slate, this game is going to happen in Tampa Bay. Irma has come through and taken power from a lot of people, thrown trees at a lot of folks' houses and some flooding. We know, in Jacksonville area and in a lot of places, really, Naples, etc. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough time. Grew up down there myself in Florida, so I can envision. I know what flooding looks like when it happens in those areas, and it's not pretty. But I think people will be okay. People will be okay. The Bears-Bucks game, this is going to be in Tampa Bay. This is a pretty tight spread. It was open at 24-18. It's moved a little bit. Bucks favored by a full touchdown now, 25-18. They're getting plenty of the public bets for them to cover that 7-point spread. The weapons are clear. I think Mike Evans compares well with Julio Jones. The issue is Julio Jones didn't really blow up in the way that we kind of hoped he would against this Bears defense. And the Bears were able to control the clock, slow things down, make it a possession game, play the field position. And what do we expect from the Bears defense, or excuse me, the Bucks defense? I'm not sure. They were pretty banged up last year. You got kind of a mixed bag from them. So I don't think it's crazy to see, a similar production from Evans as you saw from Julio, which was a good game, an average game, I would say, not a great game. It seems like the Bears defense is really vulnerable across the middle. Okay. And that was where Mohamed Sanu had a lot of his success, in that. And we remember he was the leading target. So they sold out to stop that wide receiver one. And I think that if you're looking at Mohamed Sanu's success, then maybe you look at Deshaun Jackson in this situation in his debut. That wide receiver two, I think, do we know if Jameis is going to be able to find him? Do we know? We know he kind of locks on to Evans at times. And how much will Dirk Cutter let him throw the ball? I'm not really sure. One thing that I do know is that Jarrell Freeman, the Bears inside linebacker, is going to be out for this game. So I think you can give Jaquizz Rodgers a little bit of a bump in this situation. And I think the Bucks will run the ball. They have committed to the run. The second half of the season last year, they did commit to the run. If they don't have to throw, they're going to ground and pound with Jaquizz Rodgers. And, he's likely going to hammer the left side of the line, basically go after where Akeem Hicks is not. And that's where the Bucks did it anyway last year. That's where the strength of their line lies. So I don't mind Jaquizz Rodgers. The price, the volume, it's probably going to be safe. The one thing I will say is I'm going to be watching Charles Sims in this game. I think that Charles Sims is a pass-catching back. We know he has pedigree also. He's got wheels. He can create from a fantasy perspective, lest we forget how effective he was at times last year. So I think Charles Sims is very interesting in this situation. A tight game. If this game stays close or the Bears do what they did against Atlanta, you could see more Charles Sims than Jaquizz Rodgers on that third down set. So as for the Bears, I'm not going to go there. The weapons, Tariq Cohen and everything, the hype there. Atlanta Falcons defense just gives up so many points across the board. I just don't see the Bucks doing it in the same way. And I think that that's represented kind of in the total. Mike Glennon revenge game. No thanks. No thanks. I think, you know, he's going to have some volume. He's going to have to throw the ball. They did throw the ball 70% of the time when they were down last game, but I just don't think Glennon is in a necessarily a good spot. Browns, Ravens. Yeah, Joe Flacco. Okay. Yeah, of course, Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco at home. This is a good situation. The Browns rush defense showed they might be good. I don't know. I mean, they might be actually decent unit the way that they were able to stop Shady, or not Shady, stop Lev Bell. So, you know, are the Ravens backs off limits against this unit? No, but the platoon between Terrence West and Javorius Allen does give you pause. And if you think about, you know, are they going to be up 20-0 and be able to run the ball for the entire second half? Are they going to get the same amount of volume? I think I would give the bump to, I think I got to give the bump to the passing game, you know, and that's Macklin and Flacco really in this situation. He found Macklin for a touchdown in that game. The Ravens, you know, skill position players, maybe GPP. I think Flacco would be the only guy I would touch in cash games. I think his floor is safe. How he's going to distribute the ball, I can't really. I have a hard time projecting it. We just haven't seen a lot. And with new weapons like Flacco, or excuse me, with Macklin, you know, we saw nice, decent target numbers for him, but they didn't really have to throw the ball last game. So it would, I don't know how this game breaks out, really. Obviously, you know, West or Allen could get you a cheap touchdown, which I think is makes them interesting. You know, they get into the red zone, they're going to want to run the ball. And if they can do it successfully or more successfully than the Steelers did, then you're going to get a cheap touchdown out of one of those guys. You know, I think it probably would be Macklin for me if I had to go there. You know, I've mentioned him a couple times. Antonio Brown played out of the slot, you know, and does play out of the slot, you know, about 40% of the time here. And, you know, he torched them from there last time. So, Macklin in the slot, I think he's nice. The Ravens defense also very much in play against the Cleveland. The Cleveland offensive line is way better than the Cincinnati line, but there's a lot of talent in this unit. So Cleveland on the road, rookie quarterback, you have to think that the Ravens defense is certainly in play. Buffalo, Carolina. Listen, I really do think this Carolina defense is going to be solid this year. They looked really good against San Francisco. You know, a healthy Thomas Davis, healthy Luke Kuechly, Kaywon Short. You know, it's going to be a problem for this Bills team. And you know, we realize Carolina, not always a perfect defensive unit, especially on the passing side of things. They allowed some production to Pierre Garçon last week. But I do think that they will be able to get to, you know, the quarterback and limit the effectiveness of Shady, you know. And in that respect, I just don't think I can go with Shady on the road here, Carolina. You know, as far as the Panthers go, if you want to attack Buffalo, it's hard to get a read on what the defense is going to give up after, you know, a really pretty decent performance against the Jets. The Jets aren't going to show you anything about what those, you know, defensive trends are, really. If anything, you know, I'm probably going to target some of the running backs. Jonathan Stewart had a very solid game. I think his volume is going to be there. Ron Rivera came out and said, listen, we are going to protect Christian McCaffrey. We're not going to make him a workhorse, which means they're going to give Stewart just as many carries. They're going to split that backfield down the middle. McCaffrey did get the work, absolutely. He still has a little ways to go. You know, I think there's certainly something to be said for the way that Buffalo played against the Jets running game. And it's not like the Jets running game is anything special, but they literally did absolutely nothing. So do I want to go to the Carolina side of the ball? Not particularly. And I'm not interested in the pass catchers in Carolina against the Jets, even though they're bad. I mean, we had a bad unit on paper in San Francisco. And, you know, if it wasn't for a Devin Funchess easy touchdown, or, you know, kind of a broken play touchdown where a cornerback overcommitted to make a play on the ball and he broke away from him. I don't know. I mean, Cam was really pretty poor in that game. He played really badly. So, this game is not my favorite on the slate. Arizona, Indiana, this is the chalk. This is also the fan forecast game of the week. So Joe Metz has some takes on this one.
What's going on, everyone? Like Sean said, Joe Metz here, co-founder of Fantasy Forecast, here to bring you the Fan Forecast Game of the Week, the inaugural Fan Forecast Game of the Week. I appreciate you having me on, Sean. It's been a while. I've been pretty preoccupied with my job, but I'm happy to be back on. I see the Lineup Logic crew is doing great things, per usual. Fan Forecast crew is doing the same. Big NFL Week 1. Find us on Twitter at FanForecast. Our website, fantasy-forecast.com. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on YouTube. I think with the Lineup Logic and the Fantasy Forecast crew, you should be more than set this entire NFL season and, frankly, every sports season year-round. So I'm pretty confident in both our team's abilities, and I'm excited to be on here. Again, like Sean said, here to bring you the Fantasy Forecast Game of the Week. This week, a game that hits home to me. The Arizona Cardinals heading to Lucas Oil Stadium to take on the Indianapolis Colts. No, I am not a resident of the state of Indiana. No, I am not a resident of the state of Arizona. But I once was a proud, now a disappointed owner of David Johnson in 100% of my season-long fantasy football leagues. So I can assume how you guys think I feel. It's not good. It's not good. I got a box of tissues next to me because I know I'm going to break a tear talking about the Cardinals here. Anyways, I digress. We got DFS to talk about. We got spreads. We got the over-under and plays in each position. So let's get to it. Over-under for this game in Indianapolis, 44. Cardinals actually favored by 7.5 on the road. Somewhat surprising sign to me personally here. Leads me to believe that the Colts will mistakenly trot out Scott Tolzien again. I guess we, all of us Arizona Cardinals defense truthers, can cross our fingers that does happen. But the obvious headline here is obviously the David Johnson news, or I mean, I guess lack thereof, David Johnson in this game. So with that being said, we might as well start with the Arizona side of the ball. They didn't look good last game. I'll be the first to say they did not look good last game. And it wasn't all because of David Johnson's absence. Carson Palmer surprised in probably the worst way possible on Sunday. Only completed 56% of his passes. One touchdown, 269 yards. Also threw three interceptions, and they were pretty bad interceptions, costly. I did see one of it. I believe it was his third interception. He threw the ball way too early to Andre Ellington. He was making a quick cut and threw it almost behind him, bounced off of Ellington into the defender's hands. His timing wasn't there. The lack of chemistry kind of surprised me, given the amount of veterans on this team. But if there is a spot for a quarterback and a passing game to turn it around, we all know it is against the Indianapolis Colts. So I do fully expect a bounce back out of Carson Palmer here. I do think the week one dud will definitely lower his ownership in daily formats. And I love him as a QB2 or a streaming QB1 in season long. Indianapolis apps, look, they let Jared Goff look like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers out there in week one. Shout out Johnny Esposito, big Aaron Rodgers fan. Goff went 21-29, 306 yards and a touchdown. That's his best game in his young career. Certainly not going to be his last. But again, this shows the lack of threat that is the Indianapolis Colts defense. I'm sorry, I can't talk right now. But yeah, like I said, Carson Palmer, great stream. The obvious spot to stay away from in this Arizona side of the ball is the running back situation. It's sticky. There's not one back that is expected to take on the workhorse role. They have Kerwin Williams coming out of the backfield, expected to take on the majority of the carries. He took the majority of the carries once David Johnson immediately went down. They've also got Andre Ellington, who saw some action on passing downs. And they just re-signed Chris Johnson, who they cut in favor of Kerwin Williams during the final roster cuts. So, I mean, the indecision in this backfield, the gray area that it is, this is just something I want to stay away from in every format. I know we usually also take running backs against the Colts defense. I'm not on board with that right now. Todd Gurley averaged 2 yards a carry on last week, and that was with an effective passing game for LA. I don't know if it's Gurley's lack of vision. I don't know if it's a Colts improved front seven, but it didn't look good for the Rams running game. Doesn't give me any confidence for some backups on Arizona, so I will be avoiding that backfield. When it comes to the wide receivers, I think they see the biggest boost without David Johnson. Larry Fitzgerald led the team last week as expected with targets. He had 13. David Johnson actually came in second with 9 targets out of the backfield, so he tied with John Brown for second on the team in targets. I definitely see those being spread to those two receivers. I think J.J. Nelson could even receive a decent bump. He'll see a couple extra targets. Jermaine Gresham maybe, but those aren't two you really use in cash games or season-long. Nelson I can see as a GPP flyer. I absolutely love Fitzgerald this week against a incompetent and watered-down Indianapolis secondary. John Brown actually comes in as my absolute favorite tournament play this entire week. I have him in season-long. I'm actually starting him in my flex. We all know the big playability this guy has when he's healthy. He's healthy this year, 9 targets. 9 targets last week, higher than we expected. And, I mean, the Colts' burnable secondary has no way they can stop this man's speed. And their attention will be on Fitz. He'll have those extra looks. I think he's a great play. Tight end, again, I'm not really looking at Jermaine Gresham either. When it comes to the defense, that was another side of Arizona that looked pretty bad. You saw them get picked apart by Matt Stafford for 4 touchdowns. Matt Stafford is an exceptional quarterback. They were able to get 1 pick 6 out of him, but all in all, he did carve them up. 300-plus yards, 4 touchdowns. Wasn't pretty. Didn't do much to stop the passing game. They held Amir Abdullah to 30 carries on 15 yards, but that's about all they can write home about. So even given that poor performance, you bet that I will be streaming the Arizona defense against the Colts this week. And I'll explain even more in just a sec. The Colts are just bad. As we get to the Colts, this might be the shortest team breakdown you hear all year, even compared to the Cleveland Browns. The Colts have nobody, and I mean nobody, not even Adam Vinatieri, who went 1-for-2 on field goals last week, that I am interested in on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball in any fantasy format, season-long, GPP, cash, nothing. Stay away. I highly suggest you stay away. The quarterback situation is just about as messy as the Arizona running back situation is. Scott Tolzien now, after that last start, in his 10 career starts, he's thrown 2 touchdowns and he has 9 interceptions. He was not a great quarterback at Wisconsin. He has been below average quarterback in the NFL. If you are telling me that Scott Tolzien deserves a roster spot over Colin Kaepernick, I pray for you, because this man is terrible. The spread leads me to believe that the Colts are going to start him. I think it'd be in the Colts' best interest to start Jacoby Brissett, who came in relief of Tolzien last game. But regardless, this is a situation, quarterback-wise, which you want to avoid. Unfortunately, because it is a sticky quarterback situation, it really affects the entire offense, starting with T.Y. Hilton, who, when Andrew Luck is healthy, is an elite wide receiver 1, target hog. I believe he received 7 or 8 targets last week. Really nothing to write home about. I mean, he caught 3 passes. He was a target on a couple of the interceptions, on both of Tolzien's interceptions. But, I mean, obviously that doesn't count for anything. These quarterbacks can't throw deep, which is Hilton's specialty, and he's going to be guarded by Patrick Peterson, one of the elite cornerbacks in the NFL. I see no reason to even touch him. You're not going to sit him in season-long format, but I don't go in with any type of confidence. Dante Moncrief, nothing to write home about this week either. He's a good red zone threat, but I don't even think the Colts will be in the red zone. You look at the running back situation, you look at Frank Gore, he's aging, going up against a very stout front seven that, like I said, held a young and agile Amir Abdullah to 15 carries for 30 yards. That's 2 yards a carry. Frank Gore, again, his biggest, his the best way I should say that he will hit any type of value is a goal line touchdown. I frankly just don't see the Colts getting close to the goal line this week. I think this game is going to be a blowout. I think Arizona will win by more than 7.5. I don't think they need David Johnson in this game, even if they did have the choice of having him. So stay away from Frank Gore. Jack Doyle, I mean, I can see as a deep GPP flyer, as a check down option for a young, below average quarterback. It's kind of just a safety blanket, but I still don't advise it. And I mean, if you're considering the Colts defense, I pray for you as well. There's really nothing to write home about here about this team. Vinatieri, I mean, I have Vinatieri in both my season longs. I'm not going to drop him and bench him because you know he can boot it from 50 yards, but I mean, he's not going to be one I'm rostering in DFS. So again, Cardinals side of the ball, much more enticing than the Colts, especially when it comes to the passing attack. I love Larry Fitzgerald. I love John Brown. Love Carson Palmer as a streamer. Don't get cute with the running back game. Love the defense. But those are really the only options I'm considering. Again, over under 44. Arizona favored by 7.5. That's about all I have for this NFL Week 2 Fan Forecast Game of the Week. I appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate the engagement you guys have shown us on Twitter. I appreciate all what you have done for us, Sean. I look forward to the future with you guys. I look forward to what we can do for all of you. And let's go make some money. Let's do it, guys. See ya.
You know, the big storyline, no DJ here. A lot of people probably going to Kerwin Williams. That's not a bad call. Not a bad call here. Indianapolis, certainly not a quality defense. We saw how bad they were. And if you know, one of the things that we got to recognize is the quality of a pass defense the success of a passing offense sets up for a rushing game. And I think that we have to respect the fact that Larry Fitzgerald and John Brown are going to be able to exploit this pass defense, which was absolutely terrible. They made Jared Goff look like, you know, he was going to save the Rams this season. And you got to think that Carson Palmer gets better than hit that atrocious week one performance that he had. So I think John Brown is very, very much in play. He played a ton of snaps on Sunday. He looked healthy. I think he's going to be out there. There's a lot of reason to look at him as a target without Vontae Davis on the success or without Vontae Davis on the field. They allowed a ton of success on the deep ball. And, you know, we know that vertical scheme favors John Brown. So I have no problem with John Brown in the vertical scheme here. I think he could have just as much success as some of those L.A. pass catchers, not touching the Indiana side of the ball. I think Arizona's defense bounces back this week. And that's that. Titans, Jaguars. I love how much the Titans threw the ball. Of course, they were behind for a lot of that game. And they knew they were going to have to throw to kind of get back into it. But they're going to see two of the top graded cornerbacks in football. And A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey. I mean, these two guys are top 25, both of them, you know, respectively. So are Corey Davis and Rashard Matthews and Eric Decker going to do the same work that they did last time? I just don't know. The Jacksonville scheme, on their side of the ball, it's going to play right into the hands of the Titans defense. I think this game probably goes to the under. I don't know how much I play from this game. I think you're going to see two coaches who are perfectly comfortable to try and run the ball. And if this Jacksonville unit is as good as they seem, and the Titans unit is, you know, as good as they projected preseason as offensively, then you kind of have a pretty low scoring affair. I don't think they're going to let Bortles air it out. You know, this is not Derek Carr. You're not going to let Bortles air it out with no Allen Robinson on the field. I think Leonard Fournette at depressed ownership might be interesting just because he was capable of doing it against a good defense. And Marshawn Lynch was able to get some volume. That might be where I go. Other than that, I think this game kind of feels so-so to me, similar to that Carolina Buffalo game. Kansas City, Philadelphia. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say the totals for those last couple games here. Carolina favored by a touchdown at home, 25-17 implied total there for Carolina. The Cardinals also favored by the same 7.5 points on the road in Indianapolis, very similar, 25-18 there in Indy. And the Jaguars are currently home dogs, just 1.5 points for the Titans. So they're favored just by a hair. I think that people are looking at this offense and saying, they'll bounce back. It did open as a pick'em, however. Philadelphia, Kansas City, they're going to Arrowhead after that big win for Kansas City. Philadelphia has to go into Arrowhead. Kansas City favored here by 4.5, 26 implied points for them, 21 for Philadelphia. I think Kareem Hunt is probably going to attract a lot of attention, and you have to love the volume that he got. But I think the one thing you have to be aware of is he didn't actually play that many snaps. He got a lot of touches. He didn't play that many snaps. I think the other thing we have to be aware of is the Philadelphia rush defense is halfway decent. I think I'm careful with Hunt, even though he's a home favorite in this situation. I'm careful with my exposure to Hunt. You know, the Pats allowed some big play success for him. If you take those big plays away, what does Hunt's game really look like? Now, that's playing with fire, you know? I mean, maybe he is a big play back, and I did see that he had 8 broken tackles, which is an unbelievable number, especially against a fundamentally sound team like the Patriots. But, you know, the Redskins had absolutely zero success running the ball against this Philadelphia team. So should we expect that Hunt goes off again? I'm not really sure. You know, they are supposed to be one of the better improved defense, Philadelphia, and we know that their weakness is the passing defense. So I think that you got to go look at the passing game here and attack that, you know, attack a unit that lost Ronald Darby for a month. Philadelphia is now down Ronald Darby. He was supposed to help bolster that pass defense, and they're basically back to the same guys they had last year. Jalen Mills will replace him. You know, they allowed some pretty decent fantasy production to Terrell Pryor. You know, he didn't get in the end zone, but I think you got to like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce here. Definitely on our radar. They allowed a lot of production last year. They're allowing production this year. So I'm also going to watch Albert Wilson. I'm interested to see how many targets he's going to get. He got targets last game against New England, and I think, you know, he's a pretty big dude. I'm interested to see how often they are willing to give him targets, or whether or not that was a product of game script in the way that they were attacking the Patriots defense with Wilson. You know, five targets and 5 catches in that Pats game. So As for Philadelphia on the road here, I don't really love them in this situation. I think that, you know, if you take away some of those things that Wentz got away with, I don't know if he had that great of a game, to be honest with you. The one thing that I will do is I will look at the tight end position here. You know, without Eric Berry, the Chiefs should be more susceptible to the tight end, and we know how much Zach Ertz is favored by Carson Wentz. But I'm not hugely into Philadelphia. I think it's the Kansas City pass catchers that I'm interested in this one. Pats, Saints, oh my gosh, this game, good. There's a couple games on this slate where you really just kind of, you can go to these games and just fade the rest of it in cash. I mean, just go Pats, Saints. It's got one of the highest totals on the slate. Total for Pats, Saints is at 54 right now. 30.7 points implied for the Pats on the road. They are touchdown favorites against the Saints right now, -7, and getting 86% of public money. So you have to like the Pats here. The Saints implied for 23 points, but that offense looked a little rough last night. truly did. I think, give me all the Brandon Cooks, however. Brandon Cooks' revenge game. The Saints got torched deep by last night by Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. You have to like Brandon Cooks. You know, Brady looked for him deep. Brady targeted him deep. There were a couple dropped balls. There were a couple broken up plays. I think that you have to like him in this situation, in the revenge game at home in New Orleans. You know, I also think there's some reason to like Hogan and Gronk here. I mean, Gronk could very, very easily find a multi-touchdown game if they're going to have success moving the ball in this situation. We saw Kyle Rudolph get in the end zone last night. Hogan played a massive number of snaps, too. And if no Amendola out there, you have to think that Hogan will probably soak up some of those targets from Amendola. It's just questionable whether or not he can get separation. If he's not getting targets, it's because Brady just doesn't like the situation he's putting himself in. The one guy you got to really, really be interested in is James White. Now, you know, listen, Mike Gillisley is in a great spot. He's going to, you know, this team allowed Dalvin Cook to do 128 yards in his rookie debut. Mike Gillisley is going to get plenty of good rushing attempts and should be able to produce efficiently as he does. And if they get in the red zone, they're going to run in the red zone. We know the Pats do that. But James White is in a really good spot. He had just as many touches as Gillisley, just, you know, half of which came from running routes out of the backfield. And if this game shoots out, you better believe that he is going to be on the field down the stretch in these obvious passing situations out of the shotgun, etc. Now, if the opposite happens and, you know, the Patriots figure out how to scheme for the Saints and, you know, the Saints can't get it done and they look like they did last night, well, then I think Gill probably absorbs a lot more volume. Which is very possible. I mean, to be 7-point road favorites in this situation says a lot about the Pats' ability to take advantage of the Saints' defense. So as far as the Saints go, however, I mean, Drew Brees at home in the Superdome. It's the Coors Field of fantasy football. So, you know, you can't ignore Drew Brees here. You know, they ran the ball with that platoon a lot. I think the takeaways are that they're not afraid to give Alvin Kamara the ball, that Adrian Peterson is not going to see a lot of effective volume. But, you know, Mark Ingram did what Mark Ingram was supposed to do. He got running back touches and he got passing volume. He went five for five out of the backfield, catching balls for 54 yards. He was the more effective back, and I think that makes sense. It just, to me, I think it stands to reason that Mark Ingram should be the lead dog in this offense. He's the most effective back. He's the one that Drew Brees has the rapport with. But you can't ignore the fact that Alvin Kamara saw all of those touches. It just kind of, it's kind of a difficult backfield to target. Now, as far as the rest of the skill position players, I have no problem with Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn also should be very much in play. I think if, you know, there's anybody who is capable of exploiting the deep explosive play that the Patriots allowed to the Chiefs in week one, it's Ted Ginn. We know that. That's his game. He's a burner. And he got targets last night, and that was really good to see in his Saints debut. Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, they are almost full touchdown dogs. I'll be interested to see if this line moves at all over the course of the week. 45-point total over under. Pittsburgh getting 25.75 points and Minnesota 19.25 points there. You have to look back to Lev Bell here, guys. I mean, I know that this is a better defense than the Browns, no doubt. I think the one thing that I will try to recognize is that people may dismiss Lev Bell in this situation and say, well, he had a terrible week one, I'm nervous. I don't think we should be nervous about Le'Veon Bell. This is an elite talent. Maybe it's that the Cleveland rush defense is better. Maybe Hugh Jackson figured out how to get those guys up front, you know, locked down. I'm not really sure. The one thing I do know is the Vikings do allow a lot of pass catches to the running back. And we saw that with Ingram last night, 5 for 5 for 54 yards. Listen, Lev Bell definitely has 5 for 5 for 55 yards in his back pocket. No doubt about that. I think that production is there. You get increased rushing efficiency. I just don't see any reason that Lev Bell shouldn't be in play as a home favorite. I realize people are nervous, but I want to exploit that and go right back to him when people are saying he's not playing well. He's not ready. Da, 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 da. It's just not the case. He's going to get the carries. He's the bell cow back. He saw most of the snaps. He just wasn't very efficient, and they threw the ball. They went with what was working. On the Vikings side, Diggs and Thielen, I think, are going to be popular. I think people are going to see Monday night. It was a national game. They're going to look at him again and go, ooh, yeah. I don't mind it. You know, Pittsburgh still graded out pretty poorly against wide receiver 1 and 2, but they're not the Saints. They're not the Saints. I think that, you know, you have to be careful what you wish for. And if Lev Bell and the Pittsburgh rush defense, or excuse me, Lev Bell and the Cleveland rush defense shut him down, the Pittsburgh rush defense was even better against Isaiah Crowell, and he was basically a no-show. That entire running game was rough. So I'm not going to go back to Cook here on the road. I just don't want to chase Minnesota. I would rather go to Pittsburgh and people nervous about Pittsburgh and try to get some of these get some of these Steelers at lower ownership, you know? And I think that's something that I'm hopeful for. Miami versus the Chargers. The Dolphins heading out to L.A. for the Chargers' first home game. This is the first of the 4 o'clock games. 45-point over-under. Chargers are favored by 4.5 points at home here. 20-24, basically, in favor of the Chargers. And they're getting most of the bets here in this situation. I kind of love the Chargers here. I'm not going to lie. I kind of love the Chargers. Listen, you know, the Chargers threw 3 passing touchdowns last night against the Broncos, the best passing defense in the NFL. Okay. What do you think they're going to do against a secondary that grades out as basically slightly better than the Eagles? We're talking bottom 20 of the league here. They were 32nd against wide receiver 1 in DVOA last year, 27 against wide receiver 2 in 2016. I really, really think that the Chargers are in a sneaky position here, and I really do want to have some Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams in my lineup. You know, listen, they had 20. Keenan had 30% target share last night. He got a ton of targets, double-digit targets last night. Tyrell Williams was his usual efficient self, you know, 20% target share. I like it. I think they're going to be a little bit overlooked. I think that the Chargers at home showed that they have the ability to throw the ball. Phillip Rivers still effective, you know, and if they're doing that against the Broncos secondary, I think the Miami secondary is probably in for some trouble. Melvin Gordon had a solid game last night too. I mean, you're not going to see too much in the box score, but he played well. Given the fact that, you know, he's less than 20 carries. He did have the touchdown. You know, and I think that the rush game here isn't the worst. I would probably lean towards him more in a tournament lineup than in cash. On the Miami side, I just can't go there. The Chargers defense should be pretty solid. I'm not going to go there. Do I think Jay Ajayi could, you know, bust one out, and Jay Cuddy, it could take advantage in the same way that Trevor Siemian did? Yeah, but I also know how mistake-prone Jay Cutler is, and I don't necessarily know if he's over that just yet. I think the Chargers defense could bounce back here, and we could see a rough day with a turnover-prone Jay Cutler, but I'll be watching. You know, I think the Chargers are a lot easier to project in this situation than the Dolphins. Jets, Raiders, the New York Jets going out to Oaktown, 43.5 points. The Raiders are 14-point favorites. Whoa. Chalkity chalk, 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 but the kind of good chalk that you can eat, it tastes delicious. It's flavored chalk. It's Raiders flavored chalk. you gotta love Marshawn Lynch here. You know, almost 29-point total, the second highest on the slate behind the Pats. Marshawn at home. Listen, he was very effective in that last game. 61% success rate on 18 carries, almost 5 carries per touch. The O-line looked very solid. It's a very good run unit, and you know, and the, against a funnel defense like Tennessee, who's going to sell out to stop the run, they still looked good. And Lynch was finding creases. This Jets unit is just not the same. We saw Shady get some high quality movement against them. He had 4 runs over 10 yards. You got to like that. They're phenomenal at the point of the of attack. They were top 10 last year in power rank and stuff rank, 6 and 4 respectively. I don't think you overlook the passing game either. Of course, the passing game for the Jets is where you exploit them. So, you know, Derek Carr, obviously very much in play. One of the guys that I'm targeting, though, that might be a little less obvious than Cooper and Crabtree, I'll talk about them in a second, but Jared Cook, 5 for 5 in key situations, had a couple first down opportunities there. We actually converted a couple first down opportunities. He was a target. He was a real thing. I mean, they used him, and it was across the middle of the field. Listen, if Charles Clay is going to see 9 targets against the Jets and put up 5 catches, I think Jared Cook just as viable here in this situation. Terrible across the middle of the field are the Jets. They are absolutely brutal across the middle of the field. That is exactly where Clay did his work on Sunday against the Titans. So I think Jared Cook is sort of in play as your cheap tight end option. Obviously, Crabtree and Cooper, no reason not to like them. Crabtree, however, more effective. We saw that. Cooper just let it. Watch this. Cooper hit that ball, hitting him in the hands, just in the end zone. Just unbelievable. I think Crabtree, very much my favorite wide receiver, just because of his efficacy. And Cooper didn't see one deep target. They were keeping him underneath short stuff, trying to feed him a little bit. Crabtree, it will be lining up on the left side, which I believe, based on what I saw, a little bit more exploitable for the Jets, and I think that certainly has my interest. So I'm all over the Oakland offense in all formats. You know, if I'm gonna touch them in a GPP, though, I'm gonna basically go for everybody. And I think on the Jets side, you know, you have to think that McCown is going to throw the ball a lot here. They're going to be down, negative game script, McCown hucking the ball. Jermaine Kearse saw a lot of volume in his debut with the Jets, a ton of volume. Not the worst idea. You know, listen, all the Titans wide receivers had a relative degree of success. So Jermaine Kearse, Robbie Anderson, if you're going to play that correlation, you know, maybe this game, maybe one of them sneaks into the end zone or is able to just continuously exploit a matchup and McCown can find him. So I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. Dallas at Denver. 43 points in this one. Dallas favored on the road just by 2 points, 22-20.5 or 22-20 basically here in Denver. They're getting most of the public money in this one, and it's got to be just Zeke. You know, the idea that Zeke is going to be able to hammer this run defense, which, you know, continues to kind of be susceptible. You know, they were a little bit better against Melvin Gordon yesterday, but, Melvin Gordon is not Zeke. He looked like him at times last year, but it's not the same. It's not the same offensive line. I can't wrap my head around Trevor Siemian. Is he good? Is he good? I have to be honest with you. I lost power last night and did not get to watch the games. We were kind of on the fringe of the end of Irma. The wind was blowing and knocked some trees down up here where we're at. And so we were without power for a couple hours. Called it an early bedtime when you can't see. But Denver is home dogs. I like that. You know, Jonathan Bales talks about this in his Fantasy Football for Smart People. Quarterbacks who are home dogs get very little ownership and actually produce pretty successfully. So I think there's some tournament interest for me in Trevor Siemian. Listen, the Cowboys' pass defense is bend, don't break. And they looked much better against, against Eli and the Giants. They were that was, I mean, terrible. They gave the Giants fans a lot to be pissed off about. And, you know, the production is over the middle, though. And I think that that's that, you know, cover two. So I don't know. It's part of me thinks Simeon is a little bit sneaky here. I may be overthinking this. You know, this is obviously a GPP. But listen, I think game script is going to force him to throw. They're home dogs. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot. He still has two elite wide receivers in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, who saw good volume of targets last night. You had Jamaal Charles out there actually being effective, which was pretty cool to see, catching balls out of the backfield. So there's another weapon for him. You know, what is there to say that he doesn't have the skill position players? He has, you know, three or four viable skill position players, and C.J. Anderson didn't look half bad. He didn't look amazing, but he didn't look half bad. Based on what I've read, you know, in the Pro Football Focus write-up and everything like that. So Simeon, low owned, I don't know. I'm probably overdoing it. And you're okay if you just are going, Sean, come on, man, move on. Trevor Simeon. All right, fine. I'll move on. The Dallas side, Zeke, you know, Zeke is going to get some ownership, but he proved he could get it done against an elite defense like the Giants. He just did Zeke things. He does what Zeke does. He gets a ton of volume. He produces. He puts up 100 yards. He finds the end zone. That's what Zeke does. Why wouldn't he do it again here? I mean, you know, Melvin Gordon found the end zone last night. This O-line has not regressed. You know, there's a lot to like in this situation against Denver. There's a reason that they're road favorites. So I think that Zeke certainly could be in your player pool this week. Skins at Rams. Washington on the road here. They are road dogs. What do you think of that, Fern? 46-point total here. This is interesting. Road dogs. Redskins are 3-point dogs to the Rams in L.A., you know, I don't know. I don't know what that is. I mean, I guess it's just, it's kind of hard to believe, but you know, they struggled. I think that there's a lot of people looking at the Redskins going, you sure this is going to be a good thing, you guys? Aaron Donald coming back. The one thing I will say for fantasy purposes, if Kirk Cousins is in a negative game script and he has the opportunity to chuck it, that's interesting. It's very interesting. You know, if this actually goes the way that you're thinking, Tremaine Johnson, though, he's going to be all over Pryor, and he's a top third ranked quarter in Pro Football Focus rankings. He is excellent. You know, Terrell Pryor is pretty good at overcoming elite corners because of his size, because of his athleticism. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I'll be interested. I'll be watching this line closely to see if this line moves at all. But they threw the ball 70% of the time against Philadelphia when they were down. And you get that much volume for Kirk Cousins, it could lead to fantasy production at a relatively low cost. I don't think, I mean, obviously, this is not a cash game idea, right? There's way better spots for cash games, guys. But as far as GPP, low ownership on a road dog like Kirk Cousins, I think it's interesting. That pass game is going to have to do it for them. As for the Rams, it's hard to really like them here. I think Goff has to continue to show his effectiveness in more than just one start against the basically what is probably the worst defense in the NFL, in the Colts. You know, it's still Jared Goff, guys. I mean, I liked what I saw. He had some zip on the ball. He was finding wide receivers. He was completing his passes. He was very efficient. I like that a lot. But Todd Gurley was not efficient. You know, and the Redskins defense is not that good, but how much of a ceiling does Jared Goff have? I guess is my big question. Like, how much of a ceiling does Jared Goff have? I don't know. It's not my favorite spot to go after this offense, but I will be watching. Niners at the Seahawks. Seahawks going home, trying to bounce back. You know, they are big favorites, 13-point favorites, 43-point over-under, 28 implied for the Hawks, and 14.5 implied for the San Francisco 49ers on the road here. I mean, listen, they're going to bounce back. They're excellent at home. But this O-line is really bad. They really are. I mean, there were some really hilarious jokes online about it. But they're really pretty bad. I mean, Russell Wilson literally could not set his feet at all. And it's not like Green Bay had an elite rush attack last year. I mean, they come up with blitz schemes to get to quarterbacks, you know, and I think if the Packers can get to you, then I think that there's probably an issue here in this situation. And, you know, the reality is San Francisco's defense is bad. Yes, but it's really more of like it was more on their offense. They didn't exactly allow a ton of production to that team in Carolina. You know, they limited Cam. I don't know if Cam limited himself. It's hard to say based on his inaccuracy. They got home to him four times, four different sacks. You know, decent pressure. They have some talent. You know, we know that they have some name value talent at least. Who knows how this defense will grade out by the end of the year. But, you know, they weren't terrible. It was the offense that really betrayed them. They just couldn't get anything done. What I think you can project is that the San Francisco offense is going to struggle again. If you struggle with the Carolina defense, which seems to be another, you know, a well above average unit this year, you're going to struggle with the Seahawks defense. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers had 0 points at the half. You know, let's be very clear about this. They looked good. That defense is good. And I think, you know, you specifically have to then project that there's going to be a positive game script for Thomas Wallace and Chris Carson. I mean, Thomas Wallace, maybe, you know, he could get volume here if that ankle is relatively healthy, which they say he's going to play in week two. And I have some vested interest here. Listen, I have a lot of Thomas Rawls shares just kind of saying like, right, they have to be better, right? I don't know. Eddie Lacy was so ineffective. But I think if you're looking for someone to do kind of what Jonathan Stewart did last week, Thomas Rawls. Not going to blow the doors off, but he probably could see anywhere above 15 carries and a touchdown. I think Thomas Rawls kind of projects that way to me. Depressed ownership, people are nervous. You get a cheap guy in there for, you know, just a cheap touchdown. I think it's GPP worthy. Do I love the Hawks passing game? Maybe. I think I like Paul Richardson as a value option. He saw a lot of volume, and he's good. He's really good. I think Paul Richardson is very interesting to me. You know, obviously, Doug Baldwin, very effective on the targets that he saw. But again, you know, the San Francisco defense, hard to get a read on. Was it Cam's fault or was it the San Francisco defense actually being a step better than they were last year? And we talked about this on the lineup show. The San Francisco defense has to get better because they don't have, they're not subject to the fucking craziness of Chip Kelly, where they are gassed and just hemorrhaging volume as far as play totals and, you know, it just being exhausted. And I think that alone is reason to believe that they're going to be slightly better than last year. So the Seahawks are interesting, but I don't think they're my favorite spot on the board, even with some juicy love from Vegas. Packers-Falcons, just because this game is on the slate. Packers-Falcons, it's the Sunday night game. Oh, baby, give me all the Aaron Rodgers. A road dog against a defense that allowed the Bears to be effective? Come on, man. Let's do this. Rodgers got to be one of the higher-owned plays on the slate in cash games. I love him here. I love him, you know, just as much as I probably love Tommy Brady. How I'm going to stack him a lot of different ways is the answer, okay? Jordy is going to see Desmond Trufant, but listen, last week he saw the Seahawks secondary and still had, you know, stellar game, super efficient, hyper, you know, a very, very high success rate against coverage. Matchup was not stellar, but he still found the end zone. He's still good. I don't care. And they are not, this secondary is not in any way, shape, or form as good as the Seahawks secondary. It's just not even comparable as far as fantasy points allowed. So Jordy, no problem. I think people are going to chase Randall Cobb because he's cheap. 13 targets is an outlier. Will he probably see a good solid number of targets as well this game? Yeah, he will. He'll see some targets. Sure. Of course he will. But 13 targets is is a lot, okay? That is a massive volume of targets. So I don't know that you chase Randall Cobb. Maybe you pivot over to Adams, expecting the people are going to chase Cobb, and you just kind of say, okay, Davante Adams, let's see if you can sneak one into the red zone or sneak one in the end zone, because he's very effective in the red zone. But honestly, my favorite piece here is Ty Montgomery. I mean, listen, they showed a willingness to give him a ton of touches. He had 19 carries. He saw the ball coming out of the backfield on passing downs. He's on the field for a ton of snaps. He is the bell cow. Give me the Ty Montgomery in all formats. I love it. I love it. I love it. You know, it's the highest total on the slate, and they've given up, you know, the 28th most rushing efficiency to the running back. Give it to me. You know, I'm in. The Atlanta side is interesting, though. I mean, listen, the Atlanta running backs saw a pretty solid split share. Obviously, Freeman got more touches, rushes, only two receptions, and Coleman saw, you know, 8 carries but 6 receptions. So Tevin Coleman clearly has that third down back role locked up. But we do know that in passing situations on early downs, that Freeman can catch the ball out of the backfield. Like, he can do it. Don't worry about it. I think that you got to like both of them against this Packers, you know, Packers team, which the question is, was it the Seahawks offensive line or was it the Packers improved defense? I don't know, but I do think this game could and very, very well could shoot out. And a lot of that has to do with Julio and Sanu very much in play here. Julio Jones very firmly in play. He should be able to exploit some of these corners who grade out poorly. Listen, they were helped by the pass rush and an off-balance Russell Wilson, but they still have pretty poor coverage grades. And I think there's something to like in that situation. All right. So, yeah, I mean, listen, you have games like, you know, it's like, why are you going to play? Here's what I'll say. Why are you going to play Buffalo, Carolina? Or why are you going to play Joe Flacco when you have the Cardinals at Indianapolis, the worst defense there? Okay. You have the Patriots at the Saints. You have the Chargers, who I like as a little bit of sneaky, maybe a little sneaky exposure there to be different. The Raiders against the Jets at home, and then the nightcap with the Green Bay and the Falcons, which has a 53-point total. I mean, you don't have to go to some of these other snoozes of a game, since you know Chicago, Tampa Bay could be terrible, Baltimore, Cleveland could be terrible, Tennessee, Jacksonville could be terrible. Like, as far as your exposure for your player pool, there are some games here that you know they're going to be chalky, but they're going to be chalky for good reason. They're going to be real chalky for real good reason. So I don't think that you have to necessarily be too cute this week. And, you know, you continue to follow the trend of follow the volume. So we follow the volume, we follow Vegas's lead, and we're going to go after some of these nice juicy totals. And we have plenty of teams that are in play. That's the main slate. The Monday night game, however, is going to be interesting. Lions, Giants. Are the Giants going to be absolutely terrible again? I don't know. I'm not really a Giants believer. I think Ben McAdoo doesn't have a very good grip on that offense. He's obviously a great offensive mind. I just don't think he's a very good leader. I don't think he's a very good coach to go from like a really, really, really good leadership situation in that to go to kind of like a soft, weird looking guy with a creepy mustache. I don't know. He just doesn't inspire me very much. That's not a statistically driven take. To cite McAdoo's mustache. But he always looked like a third grader in a turtleneck to me. Like, there's pictures of, you know, like my classmates from my elementary school yearbook, and they're in like their turtlenecks. McAdoo looks like a, you know, kind of a overgrown third grader. He just doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. All the squinting and I don't know. I'm not a McAdoo guy. I bet I'm not the only one. If there's any Giants fans out there, I bet... But they're not McAdoo guys either. But Odell is going to play. He will not be shadowed by Darius Slay. So he is going to be free to do some work here. I think there has to be some love for him, even if he's hobbled. You know, he is the offense. right? We saw it. He is the offense. If he's not there, no one else can succeed. I think you have to like at least some Odell exposure if you're playing Monday night. And as for the Lions, listen, it's crazy to think that they did this much damage against an elite unit like Arizona. Maybe Arizona's not elite. Maybe Calais Campbell not being there is a really, really big deal for them. I mean, he certainly looked good in his Jacksonville debut with like four sacks, five sacks. You know, I don't know how you don't re-sign that guy. I think the Cardinals, I think, are unfortunately going to have to blow it up here soon. He signed David Johnson and basically try to find a quarterback to go with him. You know, but the Lions in this situation, could they do what they did against the Cardinals, against the Giants? I just don't necessarily see it. But the Giants did give up, you know, plenty of field goals to the Cowboys. Sorry, wow, that took me a while to process there, guys. It was like the spinny mouse thing was happening on my brain. Like, I don't mind Theo Riddick, I think, is what I'm going to say. I don't mind Theo Riddick. I don't mind Eric Ebron in this situation. Golden Tate will likely get shadowed by Janoris Jenkins. Maybe they'll go put him on Kenny Galladay, Kenny G, smooth operator. I don't know what they'll do with him, or maybe they won't shadow Golden Tate, but I think what you do have is you have possibly a negative game script for Detroit in this situation. And if you ask Matt Stafford to sling it, he's going to put the ball in the end zone at some point. Like, Matt Stafford's going to throw a passing touchdown in this game. There's no way it doesn't happen. I don't love that he's a road dog, a big road dog on a Monday night game against an elite defense, but I think he is a high quality quarterback that, certainly for fantasy purposes. So Detroit could be in play. If we see some action on this game, we'll have to dive a little bit deeper. All right, guys. Hey, that's it. Like I said, we have a player breakdown coming up tomorrow. Keep your ears peeled and your, and your pod catchers open. So I'm going to be bringing you that tomorrow, the player breakdown, of course, patreon.com/lineuplogic. And hey, visit our sponsor, mybookie.ag. You know a lot about these Vegas lines. You know who you like. You know, go throw some money on an under. Mybookie.ag. Get over there. Fastest payouts in the industry. Use the promo code LOGIC. And I would throw some money on some unders this week. I really would on some of these totals. You know, maybe Baltimore, Cleveland, you know, that total's dropping. Throw some money on the under there. Maybe, there's some ugly games, man. There's some ugly games out there. So, certainly some good spots to throw some money out there. Mybookie.ag, visit it, enjoy it, guys. Good luck. And, we'll see you tomorrow for the player breakdown.